Chapter 18. In very tender years, when he still wore a lace border under his outdoor cap, he was often observed peeping through the bars of a gate, and making minatory gestures with his small forefinger, while he scolded the sheep with an inarticulate burr, intended to strike terror into their astonished minds, indicating thus early that desire for mastery over the inferior animals, wild and domestic, including cockchafers, neighbors' dogs, and small sisters, which in all ages has been an attribute of so much promise for the fortunes of our race. Now, Mr. Pullet never rode anything taller than a low pony, and was the least predatory of men, considering firearms dangerous, as apt to go off of themselves by nobody's particular desire. So that Tom was not without strong reasons when, in confidential talk with a chum, he had described Uncle Pullet as a nincompoop, taking care at the same time to observe that he was a very itch fellow. The only alleviating circumstance in a tete-a-tete with Uncle Pullet was that he kept a variety of lozenges and peppermint drops about his person, and when at a loss for conversation, he filled up the void by proposing a mutual solace of this kind. "Do you like peppermints, young sir?" required only a tacit answer, when it was accompanied by a presentation of the article in question. The appearance of the little girl suggested to Uncle Pullet the further solace of small sweet cakes, of which he also kept a stock under lock and key for his own private eating on wet days. But the three children had no sooner got the tempting delicacy between their fingers than Aunt Pullet desired them to abstain from eating it till the tray and the plates came, since with those crisp cakes they would make the floor LL over crumbs. Lucy didn't mind that much, for the cake was so pretty, she thought it was rather a pity to eat it. But Tom, watching his opportunity, while the elders were talking, hastily stowed it in his mouth at two bites, and chewed it furtively. As for Maggie, becoming fascinated, as usual, by a print of Ulysses and Nausicaa, which Uncle Pullet had bought as a ready scripture thing, she presently let fall her cake, and in an unlucky movement crushed it beneath her foot, a source of so much agitation to Aunt Pullet and conscious disgrace to Maggie, that she began to despair of hearing the musical snuffbox today, till, after some reflection, it occurred to her that Lucy was in high favor enough to venture on asking for a tune. So she whispered to Lucy, and Lucy, who always did what she was desired to do, went up quietly to her uncle's knee, and blush all over her neck, while she fingered her necklace, said, "Will you please play us a tune, Uncle?" Lucy thought it was by reason of some exceptional talent in Uncle Pullet that the snuffbox played such beautiful tunes, and indeed the thing was viewed in that light by the majority of his neighbors in Garum. Mr. Pullet had bought the box, to begin with, and he understood winding it up, and knew which tune it was going to play beforehand. Altogether, the possession of this unique piece of music was a proof that Mr. Pullet's character was not of that entire nullity which might otherwise have been attributed to it. But Uncle Pullet, when entreated to exhibit his accomplishment, never depreciated it by a too ready consent. "We'll see about it," was the answer he always gave, carefully abstaining from any sign of compliance till a suitable number of minutes had passed. Uncle Pullet had a program for all great social occasions, and in this way fenced himself in from much painful confusion and perplexing freedom of will. Perhaps the suspense did heighten Maggie's enjoyment when the fairy tune began. For the first time she quite forgot that she had a load on her mind, that Tom was angry with her, and by the time "Ush, Ye Pretty Warbling Choir" had been played, her face wore that bright look of happiness, while she sat immovable with her hands clasped, which sometimes comforted her mother with the sense that Maggie could look pretty now and then, in spite of her brown skin. But when the magic music ceased, she jumped up, and running toward Tom, put her arm round his neck and said, "Oh, Tom, isn't it pretty?" Lest you should think it showed a revolting insensibility in Tom that he felt any new anger toward Maggie for this uncalled for and to him, inexplicable caress. I must tell you that he had his glass of cowslip wine in his hand, and that she jerked him so as to make him spill half of it. He must have been an extreme milksop not to say angrily, "Look there now," especially when his resentment was sanctioned, as it was, by general disapprobation of Maggie's behavior. "Why don't you sit still, Maggie?" her mother said peevishly. "Little gels mustn't come to see me if they behave in that way," said Aunt Pullet. "Why, you're too rough, little miss," said Uncle Pullet. Poor Maggie sat down again, with the music all chased out of her soul, and the seven small demons all in again. Mrs. Tulliver, foreseeing nothing but misbehavior while the children remained indoors, took an early opportunity of suggesting that, now they were rested after their walk, they might go and play out of doors, and Aunt Pullet gave permission, only enjoining them not to go off the paved walks in the garden, and if they wanted to see the poultry fed, to view them from a distance on the horse block, a restriction which had been imposed ever since Tom had been found guilty of running after the peacock, with an illusory idea that fright would make one of its feathers drop off. Mrs. Tulliver's thoughts had been temporarily diverted from the quarrel with Mrs. Glegg by millinery and maternal cares, but now the great theme of the bonnet was thrown into perspective, and the children were out of the way, yesterday's anxieties recurred. "It weighs on my mind so as never was," she said, by way of opening the subject, "Sister Glegg's leaving the house in that way. I'm sure I'd no wish to offend a sister." "Ah," said Aunt Pullet, "there's no accounting for what Jane'll do. I wouldn't speak of it out o' the family if it wasn't to Dr. Turnbull, but it's my belief Jane lives too low. I've said so to Pullet often and often, and he knows it. Why, you said so last Monday was a week when we came away from drinking tea with him," said Mr. Pullet, beginning to nurse his knee and shelter it with his pocket handkerchief, as was his way when the conversation took an interesting turn. "Very like I did," said Mrs. Pullet, "for you remember when I said things better than I can remember myself. He's got a wonderful memory, Pullet has," she continued, looking pathetically at her sister. I should be poorly off if he was to have a stroke, for he always remembers when I've got to take my doctor's stuff, and I'm taking three sorts now. There's the pills, as before every other night, and the new drops at 11 and 4, and the effervescing mixture when agreeable," rehearsed Mr. Pullet, with a punctuation determined by a lozenge on his tongue. "Ah, perhaps it'd be better for Sister Glegg if she'd go to the doctor sometimes, instead o' chewing turkey rhubarb whenever there's anything the matter with her," said Mrs. Tulliver, who naturally saw the wide subject of medicine chiefly in relation to Mrs. Glegg. "It's dreadful to think on," said Aunt Pullet, raising her hands and letting them fall again, "people playing with their own insights in that way. And it's flying i' the face o' Providence. For what are the doctors for, if we aren't to call them in? And when folks have got the money to pay for a doctor, it isn't respectable, as I've told Jane many a time. I'm ashamed of acquaintance knowing it." "Well, we've no call to be ashamed," said Mr. Pullet, "for Dr. Turnbull hasn't got such another patient as you i' this parish, now old Mrs. Sutton's gone. Pullet keeps all my physic bottles, did you know, Bessie?" said Mrs. Pullet. "He won't have one sold. He says it's nothing but right folks should see him when I'm gone. They fill two o' the long storeroom shelves arity, but," she added, beginning to cry a little, "it's well if they ever fill three. I may go before I've made up the dozen o' these last sizes. The pill boxes are in the closet in my room, you'll remember that, sister, but there's nothing to show for the boluses if it isn't the bills." "Don't talk o' your going, sister," said Mrs. Tulliver. "I should have nobody to stand between me and Sister Glegg if you was gone. And there's nobody but you can get her to make it up with Mr. Tulliver, for Sister Dean's never o' my side, and if she was, it's not to be looked for as she can speak like them as have got an independent fortin. Well, your husband is awkward, you know, Bessie, said Mrs. Pullet, good-naturedly ready to use her deep depression on her sister's account as well as her own. He's never behaved quite so pretty to our family as he should do, and the children take after him. The boy's very mischievous, and runs away from his aunts and uncles, and the gels root and brown. It's your bad luck, and I'm sorry for you, Bessie, for you was allays my favorite sister, and we allays liked the same patterns. I know Tulliver's hasty, and says odd things, said Mrs. Tulliver, wiping away one small tear from the corner of her eye, but I'm sure he's never been the man, since he married me, to object to my making the friends o' my side o' the family welcome to the house. I don't want to make the worst of you, Bessie, said Mrs. Pullet, compassionately, for I doubt you'll have trouble enough without that. And your husband's got that poor sister, and her children hanging on him, and so given to lying, they say. I doubt he'll leave you poorly off when he dies. Not as I'd have it said out o' the family. This view of her position was naturally far from cheering to Mrs. Tulliver. Her imagination was not easily acted on, but she could not help thinking that her case was a hard one, since it appeared that other people thought it hard. I'm sure, sister, I can't help myself, she said, urged by the fear lest her anticipated misfortunes might be held retributive, to take comprehensive review of her past conduct. There's no woman strives more for her children, and I'm sure it's scouring time this lady day as I've had all the bed hingings taken down I did as much as the two gels put together, and there's the last elderflower wine I've made beautiful. I allays offer it along with the sherry, though Sister Glegg will have it I'm so extravagant. And as for liking, to have my clothes tidy, and not go a fright about the house, there's nobody in the parish can say anything against me in respect o' backbiting and making mischief, for I don't wish anybody any harm, and nobody loses by sending me a pork pie, for my pies are fit to show with the best o' my neighbors. And the linen so in order, as if I was to die tomorrow I shouldn't be ashamed. A woman can do no more nor she can. But it's all o' no use, you know, Bessie, said Mrs. Pullet, holding her head on one side, and fixing her eyes pathetically on her sister, if your husband makes away with his money. Not but what, if you was sold up, and other folks bought your furniture, it's a comfort to think as you've kept it well rubbed. And there's the linen, with your maiden mark on, might go all over the country. It 'ud be a sad pity for our family. Mrs. Pullet shook her head slowly. But what can I do, sister? Said Mrs. Tulliver. Mr. Tulliver's not a man to be dictated to, not if I was to go to the parson, and get by heart, what I should tell my husband for the best. And I'm sure I don't pretend to know anything about putting out money and all that. I could never see into men's business as Sister Glegg does. Well, you're like me in that, Bessie, said Mrs. Pullet, and I think it 'ud be a deal more becoming o' Jane, if she'd have that pier glass rubbed oftener, there was ever so many spots on it last week, instead o' dictating to folks as have more comings in than she ever had, and telling them what they're to do with their money. But Jane and me were allays contrary. She would have striped things, and I like spots. You like a spot too, Bessie, we allays hung together I that. Yes, Sophie, said Mrs. Tulliver, I remember our having a blue ground with a white spot both alike. I've got a bit in a bed quilt now, and if you would, but go and see Sister Glegg, and persuade her to make it up with Tulliver, I should take it very kind of you. You was allays a good sister to me. But the right thing 'ud be for Tulliver, to go and make it up with her himself, and say he was sorry for speaking so rash. If he's borrowed money of her, he shouldn't be above that, said Mrs. Pullet, whose partiality did not blind her to principles. She did not forget what was due to people of independent fortune. It's no use talking o' that, said poor Mrs. Tulliver, almost peevishly. If I was to go down on my bare knees on the gravel to Tulliver, he'd never humble himself. Well, you can't expect me to persuade Jane to beg pardon, said Mrs. Pullet. Her temper's beyond everything, It's well if it doesn't carry her off her mind, though there never was any of our family went to a madhouse. I'm not thinking of her begging pardon, said Mrs. Tulliver. Be but if she'd just take no notice, and not call her money in, as it's not so much for one sister to ask of another. Time 'ud mend things, and Tulliver 'ud forget all about it, and they'd be friends again. Mrs. Tulliver, you perceive, was not aware of her husband's irrevocable determination to pay in the £500. At least such a determination exceeded her powers of belief. Well, Bessie, said Mrs. Pullet, mournfully, I don't want to help you on to ruin. I won't be behindhand I doing you a good turn, if it is to be done. And I don't like it said among acquaintance as we've got quarrels in the family. I shall tell Jane that, and I don't mind driving to Jane's tomorrow, if Pullet doesn't mind. What do you say, Mr. Pullet? I've no objections, said Mr. Pullet, who was perfectly contented with any course the quarrel might take, so that Mr. Tulliver did not apply to him for money. Mr. Pullet was nervous about his investments, and did not see how a man could have any security for his money unless he turned it into land. After a little further discussion, as to whether it would not be better for Mrs. Tulliver to accompany them on a visit to Sister Glegg, Mrs. Pullet, observing that it was tea time, turned to reach from a drawer a delicate damask napkin, which she pinned before her in the fashion of an apron. The door did, in fact, soon open, but instead of the tea tray, Sally introduced an object, so startling that both Mrs. Pullet and Mrs. Tulliver gave a scream, causing Uncle Pullet to swallow his lozenge for the fifth time in his life, as he afterward noted. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.